Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island change procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which, according to the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for the Fed in New York, is good for the economy. Because now everybody can snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb, and they won't have to wait in line by the thousands to get a low-paying supermarket job, as happened. Now, we're on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, ladies and gentlemen, there are archives to this show and many others, and I encourage you to go there and check all of those out and donate if you can, or purchase some of the fine products from our very understanding, caring, and loving sponsors. It's a kind of like a family network. In fact, it literally is a family network. There's the Romero family that runs the whole boards and keeps the whale oil lamps burning behind the scenes. And well, basically, without your support, the wonderful listeners, the intelligent part of the truth movement, we hope, we would not exist. Thank you very much for all your support. Now, let's get to our guest. We have Danny Panzella. Danny, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm very glad to have you here. Could you please elaborate just as to who you are and what it is you do?
Okay. Well, my name is Danny Panzella. I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised in New York City. And I do a lot of things. Currently, my active projects are the Peaceful Streets Project, New York City. So we're basically cop watching and doing Know Your Rights trainings, teaching people in New York City, especially the youth, how to stand up to the police assertively yet peacefully in a way that does not escalate a situation where they might be in danger of the police using their state-sanctioned violence on them. But we're, you know, trying to teach kids how to peacefully stand up for their rights and assert their rights so that the police cannot intimidate them into voluntarily surrendering their rights. That's one of my active projects.
May I ask, with cop watching, is it anything like bird watching? Like, do you have to have like a specific type of call like in order to attract them? You know, like, wee, wee. I'm kidding.
Well, we generally try not to attract the police. It's a good cop watching outing if we don't see any cops.
Well, what do you do? Do you spray yourself with mace or something and it acts as a cop repellent?
No, we just honestly we just kind of patrol the streets of hotspot areas, and if we see police activity, we videotape it. And what we're looking to do is encourage the community to do the same. The goal is really that if a cop stops somebody, that every witness in the area will pull out their cell phone and start video recording. And I like to say it this way. The NYPD has an extensive surveillance system in New York City, and I want to create an extensive We the People surveillance system, because when our surveillance system never has those inconvenient, technical difficulties, you know, like when a cop abuses someone or violates their rights and the video just happens to disappear, the camera...
Or Princess Diana goes along a route in France and 14 cameras simultaneously coincidentally fail.
Exactly. So with the We the People's surveillance system, if there's, you know, five or six witnesses and everybody whips out their cell phones and records it, then we've got full coverage of the event. You know, there's not going to be any lying on the stand.
You'd hope so, because you have a look at the guy who was beaten to death in Los Angeles, I believe, and everybody who pulled out their cell phones got them confiscated, and quite presumably the footage will get deleted.
That's true. One of the ways that we can avoid that is by live streaming directly to the internet while you're on your phone. You can use an app from Ustream or Livestream or Quick, and you can live stream right onto the internet, so that way there's always a video archive. Even if they delete it off the phone, the video still exists in the interwebs and can be retrieved later.
So when you do live stream, it actually records it as you're filming it and keeps it online, right?
Yes, it stores it on your online server, so people can watch it happening live. A lot of times it auto posts on Facebook and Twitter that you're broadcasting live, so people can watch it live, so you have, you know, a million more internet witnesses. And then at the same time, it archives the video as well, so that it's safe for later use.
That's ingenious.
Yeah, it's a great, we've developed a cop watching manual, so if any of your listeners are interested in doing this, you can go to Peaceful Streets NYC and download the manual, and I think the manual is pretty much universal. You can use it anywhere. You might have to tweak it according to the laws in your area, but for the most part, I think the philosophy that we put forth in the manual and the techniques we put forth in the manual are universal, that you can use them anywhere.
Yeah. I still think it'd be quite funny, you know, walking down New York Street and all of a sudden you hear those caw-caw, caw-caw. It was like somebody watching a cop.
I think people would, that's not a environmental sound you generally hear. I don't know if that's the way it is in Auckland, but in New York City, we don't really hear those kind of sounds. So that might sound out of place.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you could disguise yourself as a pimp or a heroin dealer or something, you know?
Right.
And if blend in with the background.
If that was the case, then we would have to be one of the NYPD sanctioned pimps or heroin dealers, because, you know, the NYPD acts as a kind of like a mafia enforcer, and they push out all the drug dealers and pimps that aren't sanctioned by the NYPD, but they let the ones that are sanctioned do business freely, as long as they pay their cut, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically extortionate racketeering and all of that kind of stuff, isn't it? You know, you can commit crimes, and we're the ones who are supposed to stop you from committing crimes, but hey, if you give us a cut of your crime and proceeds, that's fine.
Absolutely.
We'll use it to buy extra stuff that we can surveil innocent people with.
Right. Well, they learned this technique from the FBI and CIA.
Yeah. I had a realization about the CIA and FBI. If there's a terrorist attack that gets diverted and, the person gets arrested beforehand, before he commits the crime, it's usually set up by the FBI. But if there's a terrorist attack where they actually go through with it, it's usually set up by the CIA.
You know, that's a pretty good analysis. I think you're right on point with that one.
Yeah, my girlfriend walked into the house one time and she said, "Vinny, did you hear about this car bomb in Times Square?" I said, "Oh, don't worry, baby, it's probably just the FBI." And it was.
It's sick. It's really sick. But yeah, they have to justify their budgets.
How did you get into all of this, Danny? I mean, did you have a bad experience with some cops or something like that, messing you around and lying in the court or something?
No, not personally. I think that, you know, I got started in the movement via 9/11 Truth. So I started out with We Are Change New York City and Luke Gradowski down at Ground Zero, handing out pamphlets and DVDs, educating people about 9/11. And, you know, we used to get harassed by the cops quite often, and I guess that's probably where it was. You know, I'm a fairly intelligent guy, and I'm not intimidated by police, because I grew up, you know, in a very middle class area where there are a lot of cops. A lot of my family are cops, so I'm like, you know, when the cops would lie to me, I'm not like some uneducated person that I don't know they're lying, and I would just call them out. And I guess it kind of, maybe it's a little, I'm a little what's the word? I have maybe bravado because of my upbringing, and I just was like, "You're lying. You know, go try that on someone else who's going to believe you." And then I started to realize that this is a real technique that the police use. Is they're just trying to intimidate you. They will lie right to your face to intimidate you or to convince you to surrender your rights voluntarily. And that's why I said, you know what, I've got to start teaching people that maybe don't understand and don't know what their rights are, what their rights are, first of all, and how they can peacefully but assertively stand for those rights. So one of the things that we teach is when a cop approaches you and starts asking you questions, your first question is, am I being detained? If they say no, from that point forward, you just walk away. Because If they say no and you stay there and continue to have a conversation with them, you are now volunteering to be questioned. And anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. So we're teaching people to just walk away. If the cop does not let you walk away and says, yes, you are being detained, then your next response is, well, I'm sorry, officer, I don't answer questions without my attorney present. So, and at that point, the cop either has to arrest you and bring you in and get your attorney, or they'll decide to let you go. So it frustrates that process of them trying to intimidate you or coerce you into voluntarily submitting your rights and then answering whatever their questions are. Because no cop is your friend. They're not looking to have a conversation. Even if they're asking you for the time, they're not really looking to have a conversation. They're trying to ascertain probable cause or reasonable suspicion to search you. That way they can write you a summons or possibly arrest you to make their quotas. And regardless of what Ray Kelly and Mayor Bloomberg constantly say, that there are no quotas, they call them performance goals. Many, many whistleblowers have come out of the NYPD saying, yes, there are quotas. Yes, we were told we would be punished. We would be denied the tours we want. We'll be denied vacation days if we don't meet our quotas. So just the simple act of refusing to answer questions, pleading the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, can frustrate that whole process and stop it dead in its tracks.
I would love to interview one of these whistleblowers, Danny, if you could hook me up, bro.
Oh, absolutely. There's many of them. We hold one of the organizations I'm involved with, the Police Reform Organizing Project. We hold a forum every year, and it's called From Behind the Blue Wall of Silence. And we have about five or six retired NYPD detectives and captains who they'll quite openly talk about all of this. And, you know, some of them are minorities themselves. Some of them are African-American or Latino. And they talk about the fact that it doesn't matter if you're a cop, if you're black or Latino, because there is even the cops are racist against you. So it didn't matter as a police officer. One of the cops had said that there were several times he was attacked by police officers in the street while he was on duty. He wasn't in uniform. He was undercover. But because he was a black man and he had dreadlocks, he would be attacked by his fellow officers just because he was black. And then he would have to pull out his badge before they saw that he had a gun. Because if they saw he had a gun, they would assume it was an illegal gun and they might shoot him dead.
Yeah, see, apparently, if you're going to, what was it, Michael Moore, an episode of The Awful Truth, and he talked about how many black men are actually shot to death, like in their homes and things of that nature, by the trigger-happy NYPD for pulling out something like a cell phone or a chocolate bar or something of that nature. Sure. And he said that the way to avoid this from happening is to only eat Nutrageous Dayglow Orange Wrapper chocolate bars because it can't be mistaken for a gun.
Yeah. Well, it's a sad truth. I think that, unfortunately, the minority communities are just not strong enough to go up against the NYPD as hard as they fight. I think the NYPD takes full advantage of that. And until people stop complying with the police, because there's still a large portion of those communities that are very mainstream and they believe that, you know, the police should be respected and all this. And so they're not willing to really stand up and say, look, what you guys are doing. They make excuses. Oh, well, that was just one bad cop. Really? No, it's not just one bad cop. It's the racist system it's really based on racism, and the philosophy of the NYPD is completely wrong. And unfortunately, the NYPD serves as a model for police departments all over the planet.
Now, you've heard about the the bad apple philosophy. Oh, that one, the cop's just a bad apple. And in my opinion, it's actually just a bad barrel that corrupts good apples.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That I 100% agree with. There are certainly police officers who get into it for the right reasons. They want to protect people. They want to, you know, keep people safe. And the system forces them, like with this quota system, the system forces them to do things they shouldn't be doing. So, for instance, the NYPD's own stop and frisk tactic, statistics rather, say that out of every 100 people that are stopped and frisked, only 6 are guilty of some sort of crime. Now, whether that's an infraction like holding a little bit of marijuana or a small knife or a weapon, or all the way up to, you know, having a gun on them or whatever it is. I don't have specifics on how many out of that six, what the nature of the crime is, but out of six, out of 100, only six are being written a ticket or arrested. So what that says is, and the police are supposed to be able to identify reasonable suspicion before they stop you. So that says to me that either the police are so poorly trained that they don't know what reasonable suspicion is, that they are wrong 94 times out of 100, or they're just stopping everyone who they feel like stopping because they think they're going to be able to write a summons to make their quota. And obviously, I believe it's the latter that is the truth. And even good cops, unfortunately, have to make their quotas, or they're punished, or because that's their paycheck, and they have to feed their family.
It's a sad world we live in, and it's run by corrupt scumbags. Danny Panzella is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest now live in living color is Danny Panzella, which incidentally rhymes with color. Welcome back.
Now, thanks for having me.
Cops. I don't know about... Have you ever been arrested before? Because I've been arrested twice. It's not pleasant. I mean, aside from the fact that you're having your liberty taken away from you, they take the liberty while they've got you to insult you and rough you up and all of this kind of stuff. They just seem like callous, evil men.
Yeah, I have been arrested a few times, and most of the times I was treated very disrespectfully, you know. Yeah, and I was arrested for silly little infractions. My license was suspended or expired, and so it's not like I was committing crimes. These are basically traffic violations that, you know, they've upped the penalties for. So now you have to go through an arrest just to make it inconvenient. So yeah, most times I was treated very disrespectfully, as if I was a hardcore criminal. It's ridiculous. There was one time that I was treated nicely by two cops, and I don't know if they were just stupid or overly nice and naive. I don't really know, but I was coming home from a Christmas party, and I probably, you know, I'm not really bragging about this, but I was coming home from a Christmas party and I was driving drunk, and I did have a suspended license at the time, and they pulled me over, and either they didn't realize I was drunk or they were trying to be really nice and not arrest me for being drunk, but they only arrested me for having a suspended license. But they actually let me drive my car, because we were on a highway, they let me drive my car to my uncle's house a few blocks away. So I can't imagine that they would have let me drive my car if they thought I was drunk, but for whatever reason, they did. I guess they just didn't realize it. That was probably the nicest treatment I've ever had by two police officers. And I didn't deserve it. That time, I didn't deserve it.
Well, I have this feeling as well that the police attract certain individuals to, you know, like the cliche, like if you were a bully at school, you go into the cops and things like that. I wonder if there's ever been a statistical analysis of currently employed police officers around the globe and whether or not they were, in fact, bullies back in high school.
I don't know if there's ever been a study, but I think that you're absolutely right. I like to say it. I don't know if we can use language on this show, but
we can't.
We can't. Okay. So what I like to usually would say is if you're not a jerk when you join the NYPD, the NYPD makes you a jerk. So, yeah, I think that a lot of people who want that kind of bully power, they want that badge, that shiny badge that gives them the state authority to be a bully, certainly join for that reason, because they get to have a gun and they get to push people around and I'm the law and you will respect me. There's a lot of people like that, that join the police. As a matter of fact, I heard a statistic one time and I've not been able to find the research to back it up, but I have heard the statistic that the two top professions in the United States for criminals, the first is being a teacher, and the second is being a police officer. And that's, there's more, I guess, more convictions of crimes in those two professions than any other professions.
Well, those are authority figures. And, you know, people generally respect, look up to, and follow the orders of authority figures, don't they? Which makes it perfect if you want to commit substantial quantities of crime.
Sure.
And not only is this a problem in the United States police force, I have a good friend here who's now a private investigator, 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand police. She said to me, quote, "The New Zealand police are so corrupt, you will either leave or become corrupt."
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically what the deal is. I mean, if anybody's ever seen the movie Serpico, that's based on a true story. Al Pacino played the character Frank Serpico, who was an actual detective who was trying to be a good cop. And what happened? They tried to assassinate him. They went into a drug bust and they let him go in first and nobody followed him in. The cops just let him go in by himself so he would get murdered by the drug dealers. He survived and now he's somewhere hiding in Europe. But yeah, the NYPD tried to kill one of their own for being a good cop.
That's freaking scary.
It is scary.
What other elements do you feel are most concerning about police behavior?
Well, I think that the thing that is most scary about it is that police violence is legal. It's allowed by the state. I mean, time after time, even the worst abuses, the cops just get let go free. Last summer, there was an incident where two NYPD police officers, the official story is they escorted a drunk girl home. She was drunk in a bar. They escorted her home. Well, it turns out that one of the cops stood outside and the other cop brought her upstairs and was up there for 2 hours. And the next day she claimed the cop raped her. Well, for 2 hours, now the cop's story was he fell asleep and took a nap. Now, does that make sense? A cop on duty brings a drunk girl home and takes a nap in her apartment, and next day she says he raped her? Well, they both got off with no penalty at all.
Especially the one who raped her, did he get off?
Yeah. Oh, I don't even want to touch that one. But yeah, I mean...
She didn't either.
Even the most egregious, you know, abuses of power, these cops let go free because the society will side with them. And of course, the system they come from, the state, the judges, the prosecutors, that whole system works together. So of course, they're going to get off. And that is really the scariest thing. And that's why I don't believe voting is going to change it. You're not going to elect somebody who's going to come in and change the whole system, because either if you try to change the system either changes or kills you or throws you out. The change has to come from the grassroots. It has to come from people standing up and saying, I know my rights and I'm not going to allow you to violate my rights no matter what. And even if that means, you know, ultimately putting ourselves in physical danger, then that's eventually where we're going to have to go with this. But for right now, I think it's a matter of just educating as many people as possible about their rights and the importance of standing up for those rights and not giving them up, even the small ones.
You know, that reminds me of what the Black Panthers did way back in the day is they're armed. and they'd see police beating up unarmed black men, and they'd run at them, point the guns at the cops and say, stop beating this unarmed man. And they'd stop beating them, you know? And,
yeah.
And so now nobody in New York is allowed any guns because, hey, you'd be able to defend yourself against the cops.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I laugh at the Tea Party as a whole because they're very in support of the police. And the police is the front line. I mean, they're terrified of the government. Oh, we don't want big government. Obama's going to put us in, you know, he's going to oppress us and all this. He's going to become a dictator. And I can agree with him. I mean, I think all presidents are dictators. But they don't want to disarm the cops and they don't realize the cops are going to be the first line. The first people that come for them when Obama becomes a dictator are going to be the NYPD. So you need to be armed to protect yourself from the NYPD. We recently had right after the Sandy Hook shooting, we had a New York State gun ban passed that banned assault rifles and bullet clips over a certain amount, I think 8 or 9 bullets per clip. And there was this big outrage because the cops were not exempted from the ban. And, well, the cops need to have big clips. It's okay if we the people don't have big clips, but the cops need to have it. I said, what are you people thinking? This is what the Tea Party response was. So what are you people thinking? You're saying you want your oppressors to have more bullets than you do. That makes no sense. That's contrary to the Second Amendment. So unfortunately, this is a deep kind of probably an American way of thinking, you know, Uncle Sam and Superman and truth, justice in the American way. People still believe that the police stand for that, that the Pentagon stands for that, that Washington, D.C., even though it's corrupt, it's better than any other country. So it still stands for that. But it's not true. I don't believe it ever was true. I believe that was just the propaganda. That was an image that was put forth to get the mass of people behind it, to support this corrupt, evil, racist, oppressive system and class-driven oppressive system.
Yeah, and that's what the Second Amendment was actually for, is to protect the people from the government turning tyrannical. And in fact, doesn't it even specifically state that the people should be just as well armed as the national military?
Well, I mean, from my reading of it, that's what I would say. Yeah. As a matter of fact, constitutionally speaking, there really isn't even supposed to be a standing military. So the only armed people should be the citizens. There aren't supposed to be professional soldiers or really even cops, I would argue. They're supposed to be the militia is supposed to be all of the adults of the county. So in times of war, you would just call each militia from each county. We need to go to war. But back then, there weren't really wars like we're fighting today, where we're going to foreign countries to fight wars. It was a matter of defending our borders. That's the way it's supposed to be. Non-interventionist foreign policy would say, well, we just build up our borders and be able to defend ourselves if another country attacks us. We don't need to have professional troops that we can send to this country or to that country to occupy. And that's how we get entangled, and it causes all kinds of other problems, like blowback, which lead to things like 9/11.
Yeah, and the Founding Fathers also warned against entangled alliances and allegiances and things of that nature as well, because, well, basically, you know, if somebody else from overseas is your ally, you've got to go and support them. So basically, it takes away your personal choice of whether or not you want to enter conflicts just because your ally comes in, you know?
That's right.
And that's a similar thing that's happening here. And on that point, Adam Kokesh, his recent arrest, because we're talking about being armed in order to protect yourself from the cops. And so here we have an activist who is wanting to do an armed, peaceful rally, being black bagged by the cops and taken away. And now we have protests that occurred earlier today outside the courthouse in Philly. And I think what's really scaring me here is that they really can just disappear you. And I'm not 100% sure whether or not any amount of protesting will help, because those protesters aren't armed or willing to use those arms.
Sure.
and whereas the cops are, and they are willing to use them.
Yeah, of course. Well, they've got the full force of the state behind them, so of course they're willing to use them. I think that we the people are much more cautious when it comes to using or resorting to violence, even defensive violence, because we know that even raising arms against the government will bring, you know, it'll bring the full force of that weight of the state down on top of us. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I support Adam. I support the idea for his rally. I think, and I hope that the Tea Party will get on board and march with him. I want to see, you know, I would love to see 10,000 or 50,000 or even 1 million. I mean, I think that's probably a stretch, but I'd love to see that amount of people march down there peacefully. And the weapons don't need to be loaded necessarily, but just as a symbolic show that, look, we're going to exercise our rights. This is, again, it's a peaceful but assertive exercise of our God-given rights. Forget about the Constitution. There's plenty of tyranny that's written into the Constitution, but it's a matter of exercising our God-given right to defend ourselves any way we choose.
Now, defending your rights doesn't necessarily have to come to the point where it's the barrel of the gun. Like, that's the last step in defending your rights. And the first step is just using your words and knowing your enemy. And I don't think people realize the cops are your enemy, okay, in the vast majority of cases. And people don't trust police and because they can't be trusted. And that, and inherently, is a really bad thing. Police should be trustworthy. Police should be honest. Police should be decent. Way back in the day, in England, and the Bobby on the street type of police work was able to keep public order extraordinarily well. Crime was next to nothing, and the cops were armed with a pen and a notepad. And most importantly of all, they were armed with community spirit. Police would go into local shops, talk to the shopkeepers and ask them how they're doing, ask them how their family is and things of that nature. Now it's not about that at all. The only time a cop's going to come into your shop is if you've either been robbed and they're going to come in and say, well, I don't think we're going to be able to catch the guy, or if they're coming in to rob you.
Well, it's a good point, and that's one of the things that we advocate for as Peaceful Streets Project and some of the other organizations is what we call community-based policing. Currently, the way police are assigned is when you come out of the academy. Now, just picture this. You're 22, 23 years old. You come out of the academy. They strap a gun to your hip. You're brand new on the street. They pair you up with a senior officer, and they place you in one of the high crime areas, quote unquote, to break you in. So the majority of cops coming out of the academy are going to be white, and they're putting them in black neighborhoods and telling them everyone on the street is an animal, and you need to make sure you get home alive to your girlfriend, wife, your mother. So shoot first, ask questions later.
We'll
make
right
sure
back,
you protect your life.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle
Welcome
East
back.
Is a modern day attack on the native land project.
Welcome back, everybody. That's Genocide. They're genocidewrap.com. Fracking awesome musician. He sent me one of his albums, and generally I don't like rap, but if they're rapping about the New World Order and exposing scumbaggery, it ain't nothing more awesome than that, I got to say. And we were talking about cops, and I remember having a conversation with Dr. Green once. He started up this big cannabis club here in Auckland. It's since been shut down. And we talked about how the cops and the government lie all the time, in order to enforce their laws. And because their laws are a lie, and it just occurs to me that they've got to train these people to be really, really good liars. And that's because you can't enforce laws that are lies unless you're a trained liar. And this is actually one of the pet issues for you, isn't it, the cannabis issue?
Yeah, it's actually a fairly new issue for me. And my mom, what actually woke me up, I guess, was my mom passed away from breast cancer about 6 years ago. And when she passed away, she was very young. She was only 55. I went into like a deep depression. And I just kind of, I moved into my friend's basement and I isolated myself and just kind of, I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about politics. Before that, I really was kind of mildly interested in politics, but I wasn't like, you know, really. And somebody handed me Zeitgeist while I was in that depression, or told me to watch it. And I watched it, and it was like I got addicted to watching internet documentaries. So I started watching The Obama Deception and all these different films. Well, one of the things that I had kind of barely been starting to research just before my mom passed away was holistic medicine and alternative cures, because she was on chemo and radiation and it was killing her. I was watching her die. And so I was trying to get more information, but it was pretty much too late for her, and she really wasn't that open to it. But it's something that I continued. And then I saw American Drug War, a film by Kevin Booth, and he barely touches on it. And then I just started to do more research. Well, his new film, before I get to the new film, then I read an article in High Times magazine, and it was about Dr. William Courtney and who is now his wife, but just one of his patients at the time, Kristen Pazuski. This girl had all kinds of crazy lupus and all kinds of crazy diseases. I mean, she literally she couldn't really get out of bed. She couldn't have kids. She was like, they told her, you're not going to live past 25. And she was on all these pain meds. Well, one day she's on vacation and she runs out of her meds and she can't get more. So one of her friends says, here, try this, smoke a joint. It'll help you with your pain. It'll help you relax. So I guess for about a week she was smoking, and a lot of her infections started to go away and some of her medical problems started to recede. So she was like, oh, wow, what's happening here? Well, that's how she got hooked up with Dr. Courtney. So Dr. Courtney was doing research about the cannabinoids and how they interact. We actually have cannabinoid receptors in our brain. And there's this whole slew of research that I got exposed to. And I was like, wow, this is phenomenal. Now, I was never, as a libertarian, I said, you know, we definitely should legalize weed. Anybody, you have the right to smoke whatever you want. But I'm not a pot smoker really myself. And so I didn't really care about the issue. I wasn't active about it as an activist. But when I came across this information, I said, my God, this is stuff that can help anybody, because whether you have health issues or not, we all have allergies, we all have different things. And eating raw cannabis, and there's no psychoactive effect, so you don't get high from eating it raw, can help anyone. And I said, this is how we are going to legalize marijuana on a grand scale, is by showing people this information that you don't have to get high, and it's going to open up to a whole new world of people who don't want to get high, but maybe recognize the fact that we can now use it basically as a vegetable, that it really is a vegetable. It should be consumed as a vegetable, and the amazing health benefits that come from it. So now, fast forward a couple of years, and I decided I was going to make a film on it. Kevin Booth is coming out with his new film, American Drug War II, and he is focused in this film on the cancer research. He's focused on Dr. Courtney's research and other doctors, Rick Simpson's work with hemp oil curing or at least treating cancer, certainly much more effectively than traditional allopathic medicine with chemo or radiation. And it's really a very powerful film. So right now I'm helping to organize the New York City premiere. It's something that I'm very excited about, getting this information out. I'm still in pre-production on my film, which is going to focus more, not so much on cancer, but just on kind of helping the everyday person nutritionally with cannabis to become a healthier person, to avoid cancer. It's more like preventative holistic medicine is what I'm focusing on, because I really want to reach out to kind of the whole holistic, the vegans, the vegetarians, that section of our culture, so that if I can get them on board with the legalization movement, we can really move the ball down the road, and maybe we can legalize in New York the same way they just did in Colorado and Washington. I mean, that would be fabulous. I cannot wait for the day that I can just grow cannabis in my backyard alongside my tomatoes and just be able to eat it like the vegetable, like I really believe we were meant by God to do. And so if you're interested in the film, you can go to AmericanDrugWar2.com and check it out. And you can pre-order it right now on iTunes, and it comes out June 6th. And it's really a powerful film. I was able to preview it the other day before I interviewed Kevin for my blog, which is TrueSquad.tv. So you can check that out if you want to see the interview. And I literally cried through the whole film because the information is just, it's literally life-saving. And one of the main stories in the film is a little boy, a two-year-old boy named Cashy Hyde, who had a brain tumor, and his parents were secretly treating him. This kid is in the hospital, and his parents are secretly treating him with hemp oil, and the doctors cannot figure out why his brain tumor keeps shrinking. And then, unfortunately, things just kept happening legislatively. They banned marijuana. They legalized it, and then they repealed the legalization in their home state, so they couldn't get the hemp oil, so the tumor came back. And literally, drug laws murdered this child because he was being healed by hemp oil, and then they kept just making it impossible for his parents to be able to get that hemp oil to heal him or to keep him on a regimen to keep his brain tumor from coming back. And eventually, it did take his life. And it's really a heartbreaking story to know that there's probably a million other people, not just children, but people in general that could be benefiting from these cures that the U.S. government is patenting. They are patenting cannabinoids. They are patenting strains of marijuana, the U.S. government. But yet they say it has no medical value and they won't allow people to just use it. And it is sickening and it makes me angry. And this is why I'm really, this is one of my core issues alongside with the Peaceful Streets Project. This is the two, these are the two issues that I'm really focused on right now.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about how the cops are bust a whole lot of people and don't find anything on 94% of them. And I'm just thinking, you know, on that 6%, you know how many people smoke marijuana? It's like, what, one in eight or something of that nature? So I can probably guarantee you that a substantial portion of that only six people that actually have something illegal on them, so on and so forth, will be cannabis users. And I think that's the real problem here with cannabis in general, is because it's so widely used, so therefore it can be widely used as an excuse to frack with people's rights.
Yes, and I agree. I think probably out of that six people that are being arrested, most likely it is for cannabis. And it's just a sad fact that we're being arrested for a plant, and it's just insane. And especially if you consider that before 1932, cannabis was not illegal. So for all that time, everybody used cannabis. Doctors had cannabis oils in their medical bag when they would make house calls. I mean, they were using this. And then in 1932,
Harry J. Anslinger.
Yes, but I forget the name of what's the name of the agency? It was before, you know, now it's called the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency. But whatever Anslinger was running, I forget the name of his agency. When alcohol became legal again, he had nothing to do and he was going to have to fire his whole staff. So he said, well, let's go after marijuana. And they started using the Spanish word for it and blaming Mexicans and saying, oh, it's this devil weed marijuana from Mexico. It's not like the stuff that we've been using in the United States. It's horrible. It's terrible. And they started, he was friends with Hearst, and they started a propaganda war about marijuana. And that's it. And the rest is history. So I'm actually going to include a lot of that in the film because I want people to understand the history of how marijuana became illegal to begin with, to see that it's really just a farce. It's really just, again, like every other thing that we're dealing with the police state in our modern lifetime. Back then, they were dealing with the same thing. It's about budgets. It's about justifying jobs. And it's Dr. Melamed in the film, he says that marijuana prohibition is welfare for law enforcement. And that's really, I can't say it better than that.
All right. Danny Panzella, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And I would love it if you could give out your website now, just for those who would be interested in looking at more of your work.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. My website is truthsquad.tv, or you can check out peacefulstreetsnyc.com. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And I would love to you to get me in contact with those NYPD whistleblowers that you mentioned.
Absolutely.
And I've been dying to interview Kevin Booth for a number of years as well, and I haven't even gotten around to it. So his contact details would be very much obliged as well, man. Thanks
Absolutely.
So much.
No problem.
What a legend. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've got cannabinoid receptors in your body, and when they are activated, the Dorito receptors also activate. So thank you very much for coming on the show. All right. Okay, and we'll be back next hour with another fabulous guest. Danny, it's been an honor and a privilege, my son. Thank you. The virus, alert the masses. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is now Sivan, or otherwise known as James. Welcome to the program.
Wholeness. It's definitely great to be on, Vinnie. I'm glad to, you know, to be here ciphering with you.
Well, you seem like a very happy chappy and whatnot. Could you please explain a little bit about yourself?
Well, yeah, definitely. I'm always charged up, obviously. Well, just to introduce myself, I'm James Evans Bomar III. Some people know me as Sivan. I'm the author of The Code of the Matrix and the developer of the Resistance platform. You can actually Google the Resistance and get us on the front page so you know how hard we're hitting. And now we're opening up a new platform called AstroQuest, which is basically about using the body as the interverse and traveling around into different spaces in order to get a maximized understanding of exactly what's taking place on the planet, which is still you. Yeah.
And what's your website then?
The website is you can get us at www.astroquest.com for simplicity. And obviously, we're at resistance2010.com. We've been there for about 4 years, kicking out esoteric knowledge. Of course, we have the largest esoteric library on the internet. That's actually www.esotericlibrary.com, and that's free. So you can go and get all your esoteric knowledge that you need. We have about 3,000 books in there. Also, some massive image libraries and video libraries that we put together and just source for those who are ready to experience self. It's the easiest way to say it.
Oh, we love getting into the esoteric and all of that kind of stuff. We were doing a show for a while with Freighter X called the Dark Occulted Mysticism Show. And it's just basically sitting there having a good laugh and stuff and talking about some of these things that are really, really weird. And some are actually really enlightening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100% truth is always going to be stranger than fiction in many tenses. In fact, that's probably where most of the science fiction and things come from, is definitely from what's going on in the spiritual realm. Obviously, it's all meshed together. Like, I think that we're just used to looking at one aspect of it. Obviously, in the ancient times, if you were studying, like if you were doing like what we were doing, it's just called studying flesh. But if you were in the higher levels of consciousness, you would just be looking at it through light. That way you can kind of deal with it before it hits the whole fleshly spectrum, which everything does transcend from a certain place all the way here. So it's just better to be working with things at the control point. And so really, you know, this is a massive level of information and knowledge that we're bringing forth. It's not the same as what people are delivering. And it's always remained like that. It's more like, in many tenses, Willy Wonka's factory. You know, it's just some people get in there. Some people figure out how to get inside the resistance. It's not locked. You can get in there. But we've always been one of those factions that not everyone is known about for various reasons, various levels of bureaucracy, we'll say. And but for those who have found it, they found a real treasure, a real well of and a wealth of information about everything from etymology to, you know, Kundalini and to the real stuff, man. We ask the real questions, we get the real answers, and we're not in this for any motive beside our expansion. So we move out of the way all of the I call it the fluff, and we really want the cream of the knowledge. Like, obviously, you can give me a book that's 10,000 pages, but I'd rather sit next to somebody who read the 10,000 pages and just be like, so what did it really say? So what, out of all of that, what did you really get out of it? So that way I can compress it so I'm not wasting my time. And people have to realize that.
Man, after my own heart.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, this is a massive universe. Actually, I saw that on your Skype. It's like, why waste your time? If somebody's not going to power you up, motivate you, and you be able to do it to them, then there's a billion people out here. There's billions of people and billions of experiences, even more than that, that we can have. So why not find the one that's going to harmonize with you? And so now we're, of course, working with higher levels of harmonics. And when I use these words higher, I have to say that sometimes so people just demark what we're talking about. But I'm still talking about something that is free of duality, free of judgment, you know, in many tenses, like no filters. And you just get it raw and you get it the way that it is, whether you can accept it or not. And, you know, so there's a lot of stuff here that's on a mature level. And some people feel like you may get the cooties with talking about some of the stuff, you know, that sometimes you have to discuss when it comes to talking about this body and what exactly is needed to power up. And so, yeah, we've been basically riding this cosmic wave for a while, man, like I guess an intense Silver Surfers with, you know, we're really mean on the board and we don't fall off. And it's just been consecutively year after year, like a upslope. We've never really stayed at one thing. That's kind of how my conversation I was going to have today was just going to be talking about some of the phases that we went through with our understanding, as we call it. We don't use the word understanding or overstanding. We use the understanding because that's the first place people are going to have to make any type of stand for themselves. And then, you know, you come into massive levels of knowledge. Like I heard the previous conversation, obviously, with you and the gentleman. And I want to definitely get into at some point this conversation about principalities and dominions. Really, if you want to not have someone that has power over you, how you position that on a spiritual level. Because, you know, it's kind of brute force messing with it on the fleshly realm. And, of course, they're geared up, as you've noticed. But as you see, even a sheriff, he wears a badge. That's a star there. There's 7-point stars. There's different stars. So don't think that these people are not understanding cosmic law and fudging with cosmic law. Also galactic law. And then, of course, they have their own laws, which can easily be broken. But cosmic laws you can't break. So when it comes to putting someone in a cage, locking someone down, putting them in a pen, and you're doing that to a soul, there's still cosmic laws that you need to fully understand. And then obviously what they've discovered is certain loopholes that if we knew and understood spirituality, then we could easily catch it before it occurs. But the beginning of this conversation was really about the language and about really seeing that the way the language is constructed. And I'm not sure if we're on the first half of this conversation, so we only have like a short period of time. And I don't want to kind of get cut off in the middle of it, but I'll start it. The language in itself, if you understand, look at the English language, it's 26 letters, okay? So if you understand the ancient mystery behind letters, numbers, etc., you understand that a language is a cabal or a cable. The first letter has to connect with the last letter. That's like a cable. The front end has to connect with the back end, like they call A to Z, right? So in the English language, the way that it's formed is like a half of a circle because it's 26 letters. Now, if you take 26 and add it to 26, 26 times 2, it gives you 52. Okay? 26 times 2 is 52. This gives you 52 weeks or whole annum, 52 cards in the deck. So you can just tell right off the bat, just from that glimpse inside the language, that you're not dealing with just a simple statement, scratches and sticks put together to formulate a tone or a vibration. You're dealing with a cabal. You're dealing with the actual words, tones, vibrations that evoke things themselves and always have. Language has not changed much. The meaning of it has changed in our minds. So, you know, this is what we get into. We get into the framework of the matrix, if you may. We get into the firmware of how things are put together. We don't play around with beta editions and playing around with other revisions and upgrades, etc. We're dealing right with the core structure so that way we can get into it. It's because there's this one thing that about spirituality, you just got to be serious. Like whether you're going to do something benevolent or malicious, either way, you got to be serious. There's going to be a point where things get really real in there. And so that's what we're talking about. We're dealing with a network now of 7,000 active members. And so that's about 14,000 eyes in our tents because all we're doing is in a sense, data harvesting, but also harvesting the spiritual experiences. Everyone's comparing notes. So, hey, what did you see? I took this. This is what I saw. Or I dreamed this. Or I went here and this is what I saw. And then we try merge it or merge it even more than three times to connect, to see inconsistencies, lies, which you always have to purge things for. And what we've come up with is an immense body of knowledge. It is literally a corpus, a body. It is our body of exactly what the big secret is here. The big secret is us. We're universes, no matter how long it takes us to figure that out. Now, look, just on a simple level, how many atoms are in the body? I think it's over trillions of atoms, right? But one of them is an immense level of energy to explode everything. So just from that alone, no matter what anyone says about you and what you what they think you are and what you think you are, even after a bunch of marks, labels, and tags, it doesn't mean you're not sitting on an atomic megastructure with the power of implosion of an entire universe. Or in this case, an interverse. Because now we start to get into the core energy. Like everyone's looking for free energy for cars and buildings and all this. I need free energy for the body. I'm tired in many tenses, working 4 or 5 jobs, and then you got people screaming at you and all this. I mean, what's up? Can I plug in? Is anything going into this PlayStation or this TV that can I plug it into? And then what we figure out is that the plugging in's already going on. Human body is docked, and there are ports all over the body. This is, of course, what we take in. Things are always boarding us, and to the point where we're just as run down as the earth is. There's a symbiotic in everything. And if you could see the corpuscles as you activate third eye, you start seeing these globules going through the air. It could be just garlic. It could just be a scent from a rose, but it's all traveling in these little orbs, right? And they go in the nose, go in the ears, go everywhere, and they dock. And that energy and that essence becomes a part of us and affects us in a certain way. Likewise, when we eat something, when we put something into the celestial vehicle, of course, the head, as above, so below. The head controls everything, so it's the one deciding what it's going to put in, right? I'm going to eat this, but once it eats it, as above, so below. Now it's going to go down in there. So how this whole thing was wired, and I'm probably coming up on a break here in a moment, but how it was wired together is that there was a battle. And in the scripture, which is nothing but internal metaphors, if you really understand it, but now it's externalized. But it talks about how there's a battle in heaven. Okay, so there's a battle up here. Michael, who's the winged one, basically, the angel with the wings. You cut yourself off right here, this part of the body, because this whole thing's like Voltron. You cut yourself off here, and you're going to have these two arms and this head. And trust me, that's enough to fly. If you didn't have all this down here, you would be able to fly. So what I'm saying is that this whole Michael state of consciousness up here is at war with none other than Satan. Satan is always known as the cedar, the builder of the foundation. It has a lot to do with reproductive, sexual nature, heat, those kind of things, right? Because that's the hearth of what burns up the impurities that is takes place in, of course, lower areas called hell. So this is the war because the urges from the lower body. You know them all. It's pretty much every urge, habit, inclination comes from the lower body, lower state of consciousness. Are always trying to wrestle and get into the kingdom, meaning trying to get in your mind to get you to make the decision. Today, we were also going to talk about the external serpent. This means that they're creating this bipedal hybrid serpent that's ultra smart, whipping the crap out of humans. But in reality, if you really understood the story, you'll understand the serpent is silent. But deadly. So anything you're seeing right in front of you, you got to ask yourself, is this really it? Or is it so silent that it's actually speaking in my mind? Now, in the ancient text, it's the Udu bin Lahi min Allah Shaitan Rajim, meaning protect me from the whispers of Shaitan. Meaning the whisper is not something that you can hear. Like, I can't hear your thoughts unless I turn on that node. I can't hear the person's thoughts. So this is the war, right? This is where they're operating. Lady Gaga and Tyra Banks and all that is just... That's interference. They're running interference. So, because what happens here is that now inside of your corpus, inside of your body, you have all of these worms and entities, viruses, bacteria, bacchus, living in the body, right? Now, everything is hardwired with one particular sense that has allowed it to thrive, survive. So you can't blame cancer, who's a dead cell. Cancer means the serpent, by the way. You can't blame cancer for trying to survive in an actual body or a vessel or a garden that has been configured for it to survive. Meaning what we eat, like artificial foods, all these different things, that's what it eats. This is the symbiotic relationship that's been formed with a vampire. Meaning that in reality, you see the big shark and you see these little fish eating all the little stuff off the shark, right? To keep him clean. And they're also hanging around the shark because there's other fish that they're, these fish are too small for the shark to eat, but small enough for other larger fish to eat. So they hang around the shark, right? So this relationship is formed. So it's the same thing with when we eat certain things, something's got to eat that. So this is when we get into realm dynamics, terrain modification. This means that inside of the body, you got, man, you're overrun. You have so many different microscopic organisms attempting to thrive, as the documentary calls it, that your whole frequency is their frequency. So when they say we're hungry, it's not your idea anymore. Your kingdom's been overrun. Your head does not eat food. It eats crystals, essence, air, all of the stuff that corresponds to what is closer to the emanation point. The lower body is the one still stuck on flesh and meat and blood and all these different things. This is the roots to the foundation of everything. So at the same time, if you open up this box and you do that in a if you open up this box of primordial foundation into a 3D physical buffed out garden, of course it's going to look like evil. So this is the error is going into all of this, basically the tunnels of time, the tunnels of Set is what it's called. You going into the past and bringing out Reptile Man and then blaming him that he's acting all primordial when now he's been absorbed too, meaning the human being has the genes of every single entity's flora and fauna on this dimension, period. That's how it's always been. So before we can say that there's another, you have to ask yourself, is it really the humans that are the hybrids with the reptile DNA running around terrorizing each other? Aren't they the ones behind the gun? They all, of course, there's the scapegoat Jesus concept program running everywhere where everyone wants to blame someone else. But in reality, the Vatican is vacant. the only people that are now controlling this reality is us on this screwed up code. So that's the beginning of Babel in every tense, because that has a lot to do with what? When the God says, let us go down and confuse their language. Yet this is the God that they're worshiping. You see what I mean? So in many tenses, let me turn off my notifications here, excuse me. But in many tenses, you'll see that they've erected a god, Gud, a Germanic god. Notice how in other parts of the world, excuse me, there again is the notification. And I do apologize. I didn't get a chance.
We can't hear it, mate.
Oh, okay, great. All right. So, all right. Well, let me just turn my stuff on. Do not disturb. And I'll call that person when I get off. I do apologize for that on your show. But again, the Germanic god, Gud, okay, just to show you how the etymology is powerful, it's important. God is a dog. Like, let me show you. If you understood any of this stuff, just because a word is turned around does not mean it means a different thing. Go ahead.
Well, we're coming up to break very shortly. And my friend Jonathan Eisen, who does this magazine here, Uncensored, he told me a joke one time. He says, what is...
into this, so what we're really talking about, because obviously I can expand into what I was discussing earlier, in just a massive way. But I also want to let everyone know, you know, how this came about, like how this energy is routing through me. And that connection really comes in with what we've just kind of called the universal mother. And the fact still remains that in, on this planetary system that we receive our substance, like we receive our food, we receive these the mangoes and the pears, and all of what we get comes from
a
very...
Hold on a second. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. There was some major technical issue that happened just back there, and my modem kind of fracked out. I don't know what happened, but anyway, I was telling a joke before we went on to break, and what was the joke? I got it here. What do you get if you cross an existentialist, a dyslexic, and an insomniac? You get a guy who stays up all night wondering if there really is a dog.
I thought that we would be having some massive jokes a lot earlier in this conversation. You let me kind of get off on the serious side really heavy. But I guess this is serious, literally. The planetary system, Sirius, a.k.a. the dog star. Like, it won't stop with this. It's a train. It's a wheel. It should connect, right? And realistically, it's all starting to connect. Like, what happens, right, if you got this 5,000-piece puzzle? You know, some people, they like this. And it gets a 5,000-piece puzzle, and you actually get, let's say, 4,832 pieces together. Now, it should not be that hard to put together the last few pieces. And so that's what's literally happening. We're starting to see now, because of this huge puzzle that we had to put back together, what exactly is going on. And the conspiracy or the intricacy of it, it has to be an adventure. In fact, to me, it can only really be, in some tense, laughable. You have to even at a certain point just say, man, this is crazy how I cooked up. So what are you telling me? You're telling me that I'm immortal? But I knew I was immortal, so what I desire was another state which could only be death? Are you telling me that in all this immortality that I needed to invent something to keep the drama going? And realistically, it comes down to a lot of that for our ancestors, which were us. The disconnection is, of course, apparent. Obviously, we don't seem to talk to anyone on the other side of the grave. And I want to explain this to you, by the way. Obviously, that's not popular. But if you close your eyes, you'll see limitless. If you open your eyes, you'll see nothing but limits. Okay? So when you close your eyes, you see this field that if you can't project anything into it, meaning if the moment you close your eyes, you don't see another world, it takes you a while. They call that sleep and dreaming. But if you can't see that right away, that light in your head, that's because of how much currency you have. Now, let me tell you, there is a point where you can close your eyes, and in that blank, vast depth vista that looks like 1080i, you can actually bring up any type of reality if you got the processing power. So do you see why this type of stuff is hands-off in a reality that always wants to show you that you can't fly? See, if people start to actually tap into the innerverse, then, oh my goodness, goodbye, universe, in a tense of an external level. Because you notice the words universe mean united in conflict. Uni, together, verse, separate, fighting, right? So what is the universe really? The body. See, the body is the only thing, a heart, liver. Surely liver is not heart. Doesn't even want to be heart. Surely leg is not arm. So you got all of these different divided parts, but that has to still be together. And then is there a fight going on? Of course, when you throw some alcohol in the mouth and it gets to the kidney, he's inflamed. He's upset. So this non-mutual respect for other life forms, which is basically you respecting yourself, will easily bleed into a three-dimensional reality in which you're projecting on a time lapse. Meaning that if you don't do it correctly to yourself, how is someone else going to do it correctly to you? If you don't know about you, how is someone else going to know? And it even gets deeper. If you have children, which are you put your seeds here. Now, we're just also talking about ideas. Ideas are seeds, too. And you bring them into a reality or a pen in which you don't have a way out. You're trapping your biorhythm. So people need, why are we at 7 billion people? There should be an elevator, sky elevator. Go get up out of here, man. It's already, this is at full tilt. There's another universe next door. Why are we all in this same space? It's because when you put things in the same space and they start to get bump against each other, like this whole 7 billion people now all the souls are all crowded into this bubble and everyone's trying to figure out, how do I get out? What if you told them you had to get in? You see, like, they're looking for something. I want to get out. Is it in the sky? Now, who's responsible for this? That's the other thing. Like, I come here to, I'm enforcing. I don't have time for talk. Talk is cheap. I'm talking for free. That's how cheap it is. So the reality is that I come here to deal with certain entities that have been doing this across time lag, meaning that when the seeds get a little sluggish and they don't understand the whole spiritual dynamic, they get caught up in these kind of situations and traps. Now, reincarnation, let us explain that. Not jump around too much here. When you die and you leave out of the body, you immediately rush to the next portal that attracts you. It appears like a light. This is why when you walk by someone, and especially if it's of the opposite sex, and you see them in the eyes, there's an attraction or not. And of course, the eye is a gateway to the soul, because these are gateways. These are portals. So when the soul comes out of the body, now, if you've been living in this dank, low character that's guided on animalistic instinct, which you could easily refuse as an apex being called a human, and then you go rush to the next propagating point of copulation, which is basically your mother and your father, as you're calling them, then you reincarnate or spawn into the reality again. So this is why they were saying that you have to watch in many tenses the difference between the love and the lust. You have to watch the difference between motive and compassion. You have to watch that these two serpents, right, whether they be white or black, will still mislead you. This is the caudacious staff. You see the serpents going up, and then they go up to the globe, and they're on the side of the globe. Now, imagine that globe as your head. Okay, on the caudacious staff, on the top, there's a globe with wings, as I told you. This is the winged area. So if the globe is up here with the wings and these two serpents are here, what are they really? Do you ever see the character with the good and the bad angel whispering in the ear? Yeah. You should do this. They're wrong. This is really the right way. What about the left way? Because either way, it's not balanced. See, we have to learn that these ultra-purified people have contaminated the upper kingdom. They're bougie up there, and they got it stuck and blocked just like everything else. If a person is not cycling through chakras, meaning you're not sharing, you're not giving your experiences, you're not happy when you see someone, if you're not doing that, you're stuck, stuffy, right? So when we look at all of the individuals in our reality, they're all clogged up with the money and the material and the mass. The whole reality needs a kalima, if you ask me. So this also is manifesting in the person's physical body. As I said, what is the guy named who died with 30 pounds of fecal matter in his kidneys? That's your John bowels. Wayne. John Wayne, okay? That's your bowels. Now, bowel means Lord. B-O-W-E-L-B-A-A-L. Bowel is the god of hell. Now, what are we talking about again? We're talking about that lower part of the body where it burns up all the impurities accumulated by the upper body. So if it's not working right, if your hearth is not working right, then it can't burn up the impurities. Now, what if your consciousness then, instead of being in the root chakra, what if your consciousness, instead of being in the crown chakra, is deep in the tail, in the coccyx, in the bone, in your root chakra, in your spine, where you used to have a tail? You say, do we have to tell? What are you talking about? We didn't have tails. They already told you the coccyx bone is the domesticated piece that's left, like you do a Doberman pincher, and you chop off the tail. The rest of those vertebrae were the other rest of 33. 33 didn't complete anything. 33 is a third of something. We don't have 33. We have, if anything, 100 or 99, but not 33. So you watch the domestication, but still realize it's just a physical vehicle. If I cut off the arm, it's still there on the astral plane. Anyone that has an amputee will tell you, I dream with an arm on. I don't know how it's a phenomena. So all of what you still are is not too far from you. It's just about us knocking down the divisor or the barrier or that wall, that veil, that evil, V-E-I-L, V-E-V-I-L, they're all veil. So you got to pull down and rip down that veil And then all of a sudden be ready for what you're supposed to see. Now, this division symbol, let me show you how it turns into even symbols. Look at the division symbol. It's two dots or two orbs with a line in the middle. So there's something dividing one from knowing the other. Basically, the human from knowing about afterlife. From realizing that even the mother, the father that's dead, when you close your eyes, you can see them and talk to them again. But wait, you're talking still to their eidolon. The idea you have of them, you cannot expect for them still to be that. They metamorphosize. They transmuted. It's metamorpho. They may be up there on the Erebod or in the high levels of the consciousness by now, but still what you can see in your mind's eye is what is enough. That's why, again, there's no disconnection between the other side and us. So let's get into some, you know, let's get into some stuff. Like, it's an open book here. There's really nothing that we can't answer. So it's a good time. I'm not sure if people can ask questions or whatever, but it's a great time for individuals to actually see if they want to get some answers to some questions that they've been running to run across someone, if they actually could talk to someone who knew everything. Now, I'll tell you this. If you say you know everything, let's get it straight, you've already utterly failed.
Yeah, and I've got the saying is that the man who thinks he knows everything obviously knows nothing. The man who says that he knows nothing knows enough.
Exactly. And because the simple fact also is that because we're powering ourselves on our ideas, once we think that we have everything, there's no more power. But what I am also telling you is about this immediate universe, there's nothing new under this sun. We mastered this. This is five base knowledge, 72 degrees times five, 360 degrees. It's a perfect circle. It's a pentagram. Then they talk about the serpent. It's fire. This whole world's built on combustion and conflict. Some people call it mitosis, division. The god is called Deus or Zeus. When you die, that means two, to split, basically. So the whole thing here is about a cross, right? Because there's the same two sticks together. And so in sometimes this is like ABC, one, two, three. That's how simple it can be. Or we can start talking about centripetal and centrifugal and swooning on torus fractions and imploding through tornado currents. You see what I mean? What? But that's what we have. We have a diverse group of beings here on the planet that can equally philosophize in scientific tongues and then break it back down to religious, contextual, orthodox script. Because why? We are in ourselves willing to do anything to survive. The moment that we actually figure out that to really live, to really put yourself into the control seat is about us, that's when the game begins. It's never going to begin with us continuing to pour out an endless level of energy that we don't have anymore towards this external reality and them doing their Ouroboros. They run out this thing like a ceremony. You see it, you track it now. The only reason we track it because we got TV and computers, but they do the same thing. They cause a problem, reaction, solution, etc. So, and then every time that it just gets dull, they do something even more crazier. So what is this? This is something saying, look at me, look at me. Do you notice how any star and actor is willing to do anything to get you to look at them? Right? So it's the same thing. They're willing to do anything to keep your attention because even if they get a minute, 2 minutes, 2 hours, 2 days, whatever, then the goal has been accomplished because the time that is needed is the time that is needed to focus on yourself. And so you take this, you're the candidate, you're the initiate, you're the holy arcanum, you're the arc. And the lies that have been perpetrated by gentlemen such as Paul the Apostle, who's Apollonius of Tyana, taking revelations about Abraham and Sarah, who's Abraham and Saraswati from Hindu texts, putting in revelations as if it's John on the island of Patmos when it's really a Hindu text about seven churches, which is seven chakras, and then seven seals, which are those same wheels that are broken when you actually raise Kundalini upwards, right? And then now we're sending in a dominion of a papacy, a papist, a pole, basically the limp masculine tense, Mother Circe, men who wear skirts, basically the judge comes in. They're playing Mother Church because, see, they knew that the role, and we'll get to that back. We'll get in then to the Mother Church when we come back because that's the key to things.
All right, the key to things when we get back behind the scary door, ladies and gentlemen, on the Vinny Eastwood Show. .com. Back in just a few minutes, folks.
never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on the American Freedom Radio Network. 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, you can tune in and you will always, invariably, hear a different guest talking about a different subject. That's the kind of guy I am. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be a elected official. You could be a cop. You could be a 9/11 conspiracy theorist. You could be a drunk person at a bar or a drug dealer. And I'll get along just all right with you. That's just the kind of guy I am. And my very special guest is Sivan. Welcome back.
Oh, man, it's definitely good to be forward. So I know we're probably, what are we at, the midway mark? Or are we a little bit over that?
We've got like 12 minutes left and then the show's over,
okay.
Baby.
Okay, well, that's good. The train was running. So I guess at this point, it's just all about where we're going to take it for this last little adventure through inner space. Where should we go? Okay, so I think last time we left off,
Could I interrupt and just ask exactly what started you off on this journey and all the thing together? Because you seem to have a vast amount of knowledge. It appears that you've done huge quantities of research over a long period of time. What sparked your interest in the first place, I wonder?
Well, I will say first I was quickened, meaning that I took a light transfer. And that's just still something new, so I don't want to get into, I was on the cold floor of a ship and aliens were around me. I don't want to get into all that, but seriously, there's another level of information that could be translated to a person that goes beyond this three-dimensional tense, and I'll explain that. Now, you got a six and a seven sense being, okay, because you got these five sense beings, sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch. So you have six and seven senses, which actually correspond to when you merge sound and sight together, and then once that happens, now you're like see hearing. And then once you're see hearing, anything that makes a noise, you can see it. Everything that's making a noise, you can see it because every noise is like a tube. And that noise, when that tube is opened, you can travel through it. So what I was explaining to you is that if you become tuned and sensitive enough to pick up the tones and the vibrations that are already like the cosmic orchestra, then you can read the tone and the pattern of the complexity of what looks like a Mandelbulb or Mandelbrot fractal. So again, you pull completely off of it and you can see that it's all one thing. But when you're all the way deep in it, it's so diversified. There's a billion different insects, thousands of different trees, you see? So what happened to me is that, first of all, as a child, I was always very devout. Like, I wanted to really know what happens when you die. That was just something that started since I was maybe 4 or 5, when I come into the comprehensions of being able to calculate death. And at a certain point, I saw them fly a stealth bomber up, because I grew up on a military base. And it was the first time, and they published on TV the budget. And it just didn't make any sense to me. Because even as a child, I was like, well, why can't they take all that money and then figure out what's going to happen when we die? Because we're all going to have to deal with that. So seriously, as a child...
Whoa, let me get this straight. As a child, you were wondering why they spent so much money killing people and didn't spend that money as to what happens to those people after you killed them.
So you can only imagine how, and four. So these ideas became vainglorious by the time I hit around 15, 16 years old. I was already fully versed in spiritual lore because my mother also was spiritually inclined, and she didn't allow us to do things like watch TV. She didn't allow us to eat a lot of different things. She stayed on a very, very rigid structure because there was 9 of us, so she couldn't let things get crazy anyway. Some people think, oh, that sounds like out of norm, sounds like you were raised in a crazy childhood. No, it was 9 of us, so of course if she let anything get out of control, then it was going to cause a problem. So the schools were causing a problem, the kids next door, the way that their parents didn't clamp down on them and make sure they didn't do anything, that was causing a problem. She recognized that early, so she removed us from that system. She homeschooled us, and then she also, being spiritually inclined, said, here's your books. here's a basket of books. And so she gave me the City of Pigger for the Apocrypha, Bell and Dragon, for first and second Maccabees. She gave me these books. So while everyone was reading X-Men about Hulk and Xavier, I was reading about Enoch doing consultations with angels. And it was the same thing to me. So, of course, I fell away. We all fall away. There was a point where I didn't want to see any. I was running out of the house. By 15, 14, I ran away. And then there was a time, of course, as you run away, you hit a brick wall fast. So there was a time where I had a moment to reflect, and there were other men around me, because I spent some short time in incarceration, a year and a half. And the men around me began to ask me spiritual questions, and I had a vast knowledge of what actually spirituality consisted of, even though before I was not practicing, as they call it, right? So then I realized that I had some kind of calling for this. But I was still deep in the fog of Mother Church. I was believing that there was a Jesus. I was believing that there definitely was an external God on high that was working with a punishment-based system in order to get me to conform. And I kept that as that snake on the shoulder. Hey, you shouldn't do that. You should be here. You shouldn't be doing this. You should be around them. And in this whole conviction. Now, notice the word conviction. Listen, I got the conviction of the Lord. The conviction of the Lord is a jail sentence. That's what I convicted him. So this is where I also began to expand, because after I came out of that trouble, it didn't take long. I started realizing that, am I out of jail? Because the same feeling that you have in there, if you start looking very closely, you get it out here. It's just a bigger one. Why do I got to ask?
I saw a great picture on YouTube, okay? There's a little dude inside a little bird cage that is inside a much larger bird cage, exactly. And the door opens and he jumps out and he goes, I'm free!
Exactly. That's what we're talking about. Because why do I have to ask someone if I want to leave the country? Hey, can I go to China? No. Hey, China, can I, or Israel, can I come in? No. So what is this? Am I really free, or am I a prisoner of war? Because that was the end of the straw man. They finally, the straw men were digging for a long time. The people who were in that, and you weren't going to stop a sovereign that felt he was sovereign. They dig and dig and dig until they finally found a paper that said, oh, the reason why we're united, because they have bunched us all in one group, and that united group has the same status of a POW. So that's why you have to ask to leave.
Incidentally, did you know that POWs who have a strong spiritual belief are far more likely to survive than atheist POWs?
I'm sure, because they already seen wet work. I'm serious. It's like, you know, the degree of the wisdom that a person can inherit on here. Now, here's the other thing about the universe, because some people still want to know, well, what does the universe think? The universe is not thinking. That's why it's a universe. There's no gaps like that. See, thought is a gap. See, there's this place called the zone. You've seen some people get in it. They get in the zone, and there's no thought like, am I going to make it? Okay, I made it. Am I going to make it? There's none of that. There's just shooting the ball. So in a tense, because this is really a lot about copulation and a lot about reproduction, our fathers plunged deep into Maya, however you want to look at that. So in Maya is a womb, a matrix, a place where things are cultivated. It runs on a program and a system, surely. It's organized because it's in an organism called the universe, which is in order, or else all the planets would slam against each other. So there is something about order that is necessary, but it's all an internal thing, because when you're trying to control what's going on outside, you're not at the control point. You're at the point the control point.
This is what the 33rd degree Freemasonry is all about, order out of chaos, isn't it?
Well, they would love to think so, because reality is that they are so devoid of any level of truth because of Mother Church has externalized all the documents, and they've gone and wandered after the King Rex Mundi, meaning that the Horned King, the one who's in the middle of the maze, which is really Earth, is the Sunranus, the one with the elk horns and the stag, the bees, the god of the forest, all that's about the king who they're already aligned with. So they tell you very directly that they report to the Mother Lodge in England. The Mother Lodge reports to Rex Mundi himself, the Diaboli. Because you're not, then you're dealing with hyperdimensional time lords. Now you're out of the games of the dynamics of what goes on in the universe because you're doing it to yourself. Now, remember, you can be coerced and conned. That's Khan is the king. Look, I got to rewind here. Khan is the king who's Cain, who's the Cohen, who's priest. All of these are the same words. Again, CNN CNN is the word you're looking for. It's Canaan, C-A-N-N-A-N. You drop all the vowels, CNN. Now you have Conan, C-O-N-A-N. Drop all the vowels, it's CNN. Now you have the canine, who's the dog god. Like I told you, this is a real thing. They're in heat. They're hunters. That's Orion. He's a hunter. They are hunting dogs. They left the hunt dog in charge of the whole thing before they went into the next level of their abuse. Meaning that to get beyond to who you really are, you must defeat the god dog. You must go down into the lower bowels and remove, dethrone the Lord. You see what I mean? This is whether it's a god you set up in your mind outside of you, or whether it's some idol or something in front of you that you're allowing to govern who you are, all of it's got to go in order for you to be able to sit back in the throne. It's like, so all you're doing is then, since we're coming to the end of the show, all you're doing is you're going back in the body and you're saying, look, I'm back. I'm awake. Raise the dead. Let's get everything in order. AstralQuest.com.
All right. AstralQuest.com, AstralQuest.com, AstralQuest.com. Apparently repetition works. Yep. According to advertising people.
Yep.
So, Savan, thank you very much for your time. It's been exhilarating and extremely quick. Like, exactly. It's just like, where the hell did that hour go? It's just like,
I'm glad, you know, because sometimes it gets the dragon on, but we're getting rid of the dragon.
Yeah, exactly. Get rid of this dragon. And, you know, you're talking about I'll be back. You know, one of the many things I've learned from Arnold Schwarzenegger films. Okay. That's another show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Sivan, for your participation. And also, just bear in mind, we're listener supported, so if you can donate or subscribe, be much obliged. See you again sometime.